welcome back to the American Revolution podcast. Well, I hope everyone had a really good Christmas. I know I did. There was lots of traveling, lots of partying and merriment. So hence why it's a little bit delayed in getting this episode out. But we're up to now episode 66, The Battle of Trenton. Like I had said the last episode, it is kind of fortuitous that I actually landed on Trenton this time period, right around Christmas time in 2018. So thought that was kind of fun. But getting back to our story, Christmas for over 2,000 years has been a joyous and holiday celebrated by Christians all over the world. So it's really no surprise that the Germans that are part of the British Army would partake in the celebration in 1776. But as they were making merry, Washington is moving his army into position. Christmas night found Colonel Rahl at a dinner party at a local wealthy merchant in Trenton. After about midnight, a visitor came to the house to see Rahl, but a house servant would not allow the visitor in. The visitor demanded that a note be brought to Rahl. It was of the utmost importance. The servant did so, but Rahl was enjoying the party too much that he stuffed the note in his pocket without actually reading it. The visitor, an unknown person, was trying to warn Rahl that Washington was on the move and he was heading towards town, but the message would never be read. The only defenses for the town were a few picket posts. One, in particular, was on the Pennington Road, the route in which Washington and Greene were taking. It was an alarm house with two officers and about 24 men. It was halfway between that and town that they had another post, with Captain von Atlenbachum's company from the Lossberg Regiment. And then another picket post was on the River Road, which is the route that Sullivan was taking, and it was 50 Jaegers under the command of their captain. And they were about a half mile from town. Any of the other picket posts were opposite of the American attacking position, so we're just going to focus on these three posts right now. So it's about a quarter to eight in the morning on the 26th when Lieutenant Andreas Winterhold, I think I pronounced that correctly, in charge of the picket post and the alarm house on the Pennington Road, sees a body of troops moving his way. This was the advance guard of Stevens Corps. After a brief exchange of gunfire, the pickets would fall back to von Atlenbachum's position. Almost at the same time, Sullivan's division came upon the Jaegers and sent them moving back towards town as well. The plan for making simultaneous attacks was working. The advance corps of both divisions had broke off and began their tasks of surrounding the town. This is one of those things that it's much easier to visualize on some sort of interactive map, and I really wish that there was a good interactive map that I could reference everyone to, but unfortunately there isn't. I've tried for years. And a lot of the pictures, they just show the positions. They don't show the movement. So what basically happens is the two advanced divisions of Fermoy and Stevens, their job was to – they would hit the picket posts, and as soon as they got to the outskirts of town, they would sidestep so that the next force could come up. And what the whole purpose was is that each force would keep sidestepping itself until the town was eventually encircled. So if you imagine Trenton as like a circle, and they were coming from one position. So they're coming, let's say, from the top to the top of the circle. And Stephen and Fermoy, at the head of their respective columns, when they get to the top of the circle, sidestep. And then the next corps comes forward. And as the next corps comes forward, they sidestep. And each corps will sidestep itself so that eventually what happens is that the main attacking force is in position at the head of town and moves in while the subsequent previous forces have moved themselves into a circle around town. Now remember, there are still two other forces that are supposed to be in the field, one at Mount Holly and the other one was at the opposite end of town at one of the bridges. So it's almost like a half encirclement, which is what Washington is going to try and execute here. And so As the advance corps starts to sidestep itself, they bring up two batteries and place them at the head of town. This way, any Germans that are in the field, i.e. King and Queen Street, the cannons are going to be right in their faces, and they're going to unload grapeshot on any troops that are on the that are in the street. So when the Americans hit the first picket post, von Altenbachem's, he is not far, so far away that he can't hear the gunfire. So he hears the gunfire, immediately sends a man to town to say, "Colonel Rahl, we're under attack." Rahl is awakened from his slumber, finds out there is an attack, orders all men to be turned out. He races downstairs, throwing on the same uniform he had the night before, with the note still in his pocket. This is a very important thing that we're going to reference a couple of times. The note is still in his pocket. He races downstairs, throws on his uniform, climbs on his horse, and immediately races off to lead his men. So as the Americans start coming into town, Rahl is leading his men up the street when they're fired upon from the batteries. Well, this sends the men into disorder. Coupling the battery attack with the fact that Mercer's men had come up, and they were now taking volleys from Continentals in the streets, the Germans can get off maybe two volleys before they retreat in disorder. They had two cannon brought up, but Mercer's men just cut the crews apart. They just took pop shots at the crews, and the crews could barely get – I think the crews never even got a shot off. There's no reference of the German batteries being any bit effective. So as Mercer's men engaged, Stirling's men came up and began to push the retreating Rahl and Lossberg regiments down King Street. While all of this is going on King Street, on Queen Street, Sullivan's men are pushing Knyphausen's men to the edge of town. So now all three German regiments are at the edge of town. Rahl decides that he's going to try and rally all the men. He wants a bayonet charge. So he orders his regiment and Lossberg's, and the portions of Lossberg's regiment that he has available to him, to make a bayonet charge. But by this time, the Americans were all over the street, in the houses. They're just swarming the town. So as the Germans go up the street, they're just being cut apart by American muskets. Under the withering attack, Rahl has no alternative but to order a retreat. He ordered all men under his command to fall back to the orchard at the edge of town. Probably minutes, if not seconds, after he gives that order, Rahl takes two balls to the chest, killing him instantly. As he lays dying in the snow, historians have always wondered. When they found his body, they found the note still in his pocket. But it's never clear, did Rahl actually ever read the note? I'd like to think that if he read a note saying that Washington's on the move, he may have done something. But remember, this was a man that was very crass, very, "I don't believe that the Americans are such a big threat," that he may have read the note and just scoffed it off as just, it's just a foraging party, it's nothing to worry about. So that's something that historians have always wondered. I want to give Rahl the benefit of the doubt as a jerk as he could be at times. I'd like to think that he was a smart commander, and if he knew that the enemy was coming out, he would have prepared a little bit. But, you know, who the heck knows? So, the Germans fall back to the orchard. The officers that were still alive are doing their best to reorganize the troops. And once they're in the apple orchard, they decide that they're going to plan a breakout. They wanted to go up the Brunswick Road, but then they come to find out that, like I had said, the encirclement plan, Stephen and Formoy's men had already made that impossible. So they were pretty much encircled in the orchard. So the Germans have no choice but to surrender to Stirling. Over on Queen Street, there's a similar situation. Knyphausen's men had retreated to the edge of town along with other portions of the Lossberg Regiment, and they find themselves battling for their survival. they decide that they're going to retreat over the Assunpink Creek, but the Americans were in force there too, leaving the Germans no choice but to surrender. The battle was over by 9 a.m. In less than an hour, the tale of the table read, Germans have 22 killed, including Colonel Rall, 83 wounded, and another 900 were captured. About 400 or so would escape, but that is a large force that is wiped from the field. Along with the captured men, they would also take all of the weapons and artillery that were left in town by the Germans. They would also take 15 sets of colors, instruments from the band, and whatever food stores that portion of the army had in town. On the American side of things, two were dead. At least one of those was some exposure on the march into town, and five were wounded. A huge force has been wiped from the field in lower New Jersey. This is a big victory and something that Washington had really needed. When word finally got to Howe, I'm sure after he recovered from the initial shock of it all, he orders Cornwallis with reinforcements back to New Jersey. Cornwallis had always called Washington the Fox, and it was apparent now that this fox still had some fight in him. After the battle, there's no time for excitement, and Washington, I'm sure, was happy with the victory, but he's still incredibly frustrated. Ewing and Cadwalader never made the crossing. Cadwalader's assignment of taking Mount Holly, or making a demonstration in front of Mount Holly, left that area untouched. And the bridge that was on the Assunpink Creek that was supposed to be guarded by Ewing and his militia was never taken. Ewing never made the crossing. Now, it was just by luck that the Americans had done such a good job of surprising the Germans that they were able to stop them from crossing the bridge. But it comes to make you think, it does make you think, maybe those 400 men that escaped wouldn't have escaped if the Ewing was in position. So that's a little food for thought. Cadwalader, he attempts to make the crossing, but he couldn't get his artillery across, so he turned the whole army back, or his whole division back. Ewing, like I said, never made the crossing. So there's going to be some crow that's going to have to be eaten when Washington gets back. Washington's on the wrong side of the Delaware with only 2,400 men. He's in a really sticky situation because Ewing and Cadwalader have another 2,600 men. That's over half his force is on the wrong side of the river. Not to mention he has 900 prisoners. Washington has no choice, but he's going to have to cross the river. It's only a matter of time before the Germans and British have a counterattack arrive. So by noon on the day of the 26th, the army, with their prisoners, began the long march back to the boats. Washington's army is completely exhausted. When they get back to their camp on the other side of the Delaware, they're going to stay in camp for 2 whole days. The men just needed time to recover. It's in this time that Washington's really got to do something to kind of, you know, amp it up. Now, this victory was key, but he still has a problem because by January 1st, more than half his army is going to be gone. They're going to go home. Their enlistments are going to expire. So what is he going to do? Well, he doesn't waste any time. He sends word to Congress, in particular Robert Morris, a man known as the financier of the American Revolution. He raises $50,000 in paper money and sends it to Washington. Now, the reason I say paper money is because, well, paper money wasn't as valuable as hard currency and something that's going to plague the American army later on in the war. For now, they're able to get by with the paper money. Washington would ask for volunteers, anyone to sign a 6-week extension to their enlistments would receive an extra $10 for their service. Know what you're saying? $10. $10 is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. Especially for poor farmers or small business owners, merchants, apprentices to any type of service work like blacksmith or carpenter. I mean, remember, these are the blue collar, lower and middle class members of society that are fighting the American Revolution. So this is big for them. $10 for 6 weeks extra of service. And remember, if you know, if they had farms or they had businesses, an extra 6 weeks, I mean, especially there's not a lot of stuff going to market in January and February. What are you planting? So it was definitely in their best interest to hang on for an extra 6 weeks for $10 more. So this was a big thing for the Americans. And he will get a lot of volunteers that are willing to stand up for the cause and continue on fighting for 6 more weeks. So on December 30th, which was 242 years ago yesterday, Washington will recross the Delaware River and prepare for his new offensive, or I should say, to continue his offensive in New Jersey. And that's where we're going to leave it today. Next week, we're going to talk about the Battle of Princeton. The Blue Fox is still wily and wily as ever, and he's moving through New Jersey. And so now we're going to watch him once again face off with Cornwallis. He's probably going to drive poor Cornwallis insane with everything that goes on during the Battle of Princeton. But that's going to be for next week. As for the podcasts, this is the last podcast of the year. It is December 31st, 2018. The next time you hear, next time there's a new episode of the podcast out, it will be 2019. And I will have been officially doing this podcast for 2 years now. I've been spending a lot of time working on this podcast. I wish everyone a happy and healthy new year. Everyone be safe. I know it's a fun party time, but remember, it's better to, you know, spend a little money and take an Uber home than to drive home if, you know, your alcohol level is questionable. So let's everyone keep that in mind today. I want to keep all my listeners. I don't want anything to happen to anyone. So please be safe tonight. As always, if you have the time, if you're downloading this from iTunes, please go on, throw a 5-star review. It really helps the podcast get out there. But I know that everyone's been frequently liking the Facebook, and that's fantastic. If you have people who are interested that you know that haven't been actively listening, tell them about it. Spread the word. Any way we can spread the word to help get this podcast rolling will be fantastic. As always, everyone have a great week and keep that powder dry. Peace.